Good evening, everyone. Sheets are available. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, part two. I don't always get the chance to do two parts to it, but I think I went almost over the time. I had to rush through a bunch of the sources. Just wanted to get back to you about last week. We spoke about one of the three things that the wealthy of Jerusalem offered, and I couldn't remember what ditzivi were. So tzitzivi, for all future reference, is wood. And the rabbis thought that wood was the most important because you could have all the flour, all the oil, all the honey in the world. If you can't cook anything, because you don't have any wood, so you're up the river. And the truth is, all of us who have gone to Israel know that wood is quite a commodity in the land of Israel. It doesn't grow on trees. Thank you. Because of that, the rabbis praised that. Just to go over a little bit of last week's, what we did was we discussed the last days of Jerusalem. The year is 70 CE. The last days of Jerusalem, the infighting that's going on with what the Talmud calls the Biryone, what Josephus calls the Sicarii, but this group of zealots who has taken on leadership of the Jewish people, and they are insistent of a war against Rome. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai seems to be the representative of a strong group of rabbis who would prefer if they gave in to Rome rather than fight this war, knowing that only bad things will come of an attempted war with Rome. But nevertheless, they are insistent. We saw in Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's conversations with Vespasian that both of them were upset that there was a group of people who seemed to be controlling the war and the rebellion, and they differed in terms of how they should deal with it. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai felt that Rome should be able to have a surgical strike and get rid of the Biryone, and Vespasian felt that if they really wanted to get rid of the Biryone, if the Jewish people really wanted to get rid of them, then the Jewish people should get rid of them. But until they do, so he says, you know, if you have a snake that's surrounding a barrel, sometimes you got to break the barrel. There's no choice. Yeah, Jerry.
So when were the Dead Sea Scrolls written?
So the Dead Sea Scrolls are written about this time, or even preceding this time. Just to give you a little bit of the context, so the Dead Sea Scrolls were, at least last time I read the historical stuff, you know, these things change on a regular basis, although all the Dead Sea Scrolls are now in the public domain and they're available on websites if anyone wants to go read them. They're more than welcome to. But at least the last time I read it, I don't know how much it's changed since then, the Dead Sea Scrolls were written by some sort of sect that had separated itself from the temple, but nonetheless sympathized with the most intensive rebels against the Romans. They were very anti-Roman. They felt that the temple was becoming too assimilated as it was. But that seems to be who the sect was that wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. Were they connected to Masada or not? You know, these are all sorts of things that a good tour guide in Israel, next time you're there, can give you the background on it. We're going to continue in the post 70 CE world. If we remember, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's request were Tein li Yavne v'chachameha. He said, give me Yavne and its wise men. And he asked for Rabbi Tzadok to be cured. And so what Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai seems to be doing is moving the center of Jewish life away from Jerusalem and into Yavne. And there are two ways, if we think about it, that one could approach this destruction of the temple. Both of them came up during the destruction of the first temple. After the destruction of the first temple, or even as the first temple was on its way to be destroyed, So Jeremiah tells the Jews in Rome to build houses, to open up communities, to set up shop there for themselves in Babylonia, because they're going to be there for a little while. So there's the perspective of we need to begin to create a life, a Jewish life for our people outside of the land of Israel, outside of Jerusalem, without a temple. We need to start to create that. On the other hand, there is the, you know, the other perspective, which is we live in the past. You know, we are captivated by that past, because if we are not captivated by that past, how can we ever envision or visualize a future where we rebuild the temple and that returns to us? So there is the tension that exists between commemorating the past, you know, the second perspective, and building a present, the first perspective. And we're going to see how Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai really balances those two competing forces. What's interesting here is we know a lot about him. He makes uncommonly bold decisions, really uncommonly bold. You'd be hard-pressed to find a decision maker in Jewish history as bold as he was. You know, I challenge you to find it. And again, we're talking about the person here who was the youngest or the smallest of all of Hillel's Hillel's students. So I want to start, actually, when we deal with this aspect of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's life, this time of his career, I want to start with a few Mishnayot in Pirkei Avot. I only brought for you one here, but as I was looking over the sheet this past week, I decided it needed a little bit more. It needed the one before it, and it needed the one after it. So I just wanted to start with the one before it. This is actually Perek Bet Mishnah Zayin in most editions of the of Pirkei Avos. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai Kibel Me Hillel Vishamai. So it opens up, and I think this is the most important statement that we'll find there, is that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai got the tradition from Hillel and Shammai. That's how it came down to him, and that's a very, very important statement. He viewed himself as a continuum, as someone who is carrying the tradition of Hillel and Shammai before him, of the great leaders before him, even though, again, he's not a descendant of Hillel. He's a student of Hillel. Hillel's descendant, Rabban Gamliel, and again, we'll discuss him more in detail after we finish Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, but Rabban Gamliel is in hiding, he's too young, he is not around in this time, let's say, we'll call it from 70 CE to 80 CE, just for lack of a better time to give it, but he's not around. So Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai is the leader, and he's called Rabban, which means that he was more than the de facto leader, he was the de jure leader. And what was it that he accepted from Hillel and Shammai? The Mishnah in Pirkei Avot continues. Hu haya omer, he would say, imasita Torah harbe al tachzik tova la'atzmecha ki lekach notzarta. If you learned a lot of Torah, don't pat yourself on the back, because that's what you were created for. And again, I think Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai is discovering, right? What did we say about him last week? We said he was someone who spent, you know, one third of his life involved in business and not just involved in Torah. Why is that important? Again, he's discovering that to lead the Jewish people, he needs some sort of broader perspective beyond the Beit Midrash. Right? And that's what he got from Hillel and Shammai, that leadership is more than just knowing, you know, what Mishnah to quote or what Gemara to quote. It requires a broader perspective and a broader view of history and society and the, you know, the way society works. It requires a lot more worldliness, which he very much carries with him. So I thought that was the important one. Then you have the middle Mishnah Chet. It says, Chamisha Talmidim hayu lo Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai had five students. Ve'elu hein, and these were his five students. These are people who we will see quoted in the Talmud on more than one occasion. We have Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus, Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya, Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, Rabbi Shimon ben Netanel, and Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. The famous ones. is Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya. We're going to see him a lot because he is, he may not be the brightest star from amongst Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's students, but he certainly is very much Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's right-hand man and an extraordinarily clear thinker on a lot of issues, and you'll see where it comes out. So I view Rabbi Yoshua very much as Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai's right-hand man. He becomes Rabban Gamliel's kind of interlocutor, his main challenger when Rabban Gamliel takes over his leadership and Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai kind of fades into the background. But watch what it says here. So these are the people, remember, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai requested to save. Right? These are the people who he knew were the future leaders of the Jewish people. So he asked for Rabban Gamliel, remember, the family of Hillel, the descendants of David HaMelech. He asks for Rabbi Tzadok, who is the conscience of the Jewish people at the end of the Second Temple period. And he asks for the future leadership of the Jewish people at this time, the Talmidei Chachamim of Yavne. And he would praise them. Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus bor sid she'eno me'abed tipa. Who is Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus? He is a sealed pit, right? They, in order to preserve water, you would seal your pit with tar or something that would prevent any water from leaking out into the ground, so you would have water all year round, even during the not during the raining season. So what was Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus? He was a bor tzid she'eino me'abe tipa, that it would not lose a drop. Rabbi Yoshua ben Hananya, what do you say? Ashrei yolato, blessed is he who gave birth to him. Yossi HaKohen, chassid. He was a kind person. Shimon ben Netanel, yirei chet. Elazar ben was a feared sin. Elazar ben Arach, Ma'ayan HaMitgaber, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, what was he? He was a spring that was constantly producing more water. Who are the two that there is tension between the two perspectives? Right? Yossi HaKohen, Chassid, fine, that's good. Shimon ben Netanel, Yirei Chet, that's good. Yoshua ben Hananya, praise be, who gave birth to him, you see there's a good deal of trust that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has for him. And then you have Rabbi Eliezer on the one side versus Elazar ben Arach. They're two different perspectives on how to have water, a constant source of water. There's one where it counts on the rain and then it preserves all the water in the well, right, in that pit that you've dug. And the other one, it's this constant flowing water. Okay? And then that's where you get into Mishnah Tet, which I think is where the rubber really hits the road in terms of the tension of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's life. Hu haya omer, it says, and I apologize, it's not on the sheet. Hu haya omer, im kol chachmei Yisrael bekafnos naim. He says that if you had a scale for weights, so and you put all of the wise men of Israel, all of the scholars of Israel on one side, the Eliezer ben Horkanus bekavshnia, and you put Eliezer ben Horkanus, who is the well, on the other side, machrias kulam, what would he do? He would pull everyone over, right? He would outweigh all the other scholars of Israel. Abba Shaul Omer Mishmo, Abba Shaul says, in the name of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, Im hayu kol chachmei Yisrael bekaf moznayim, right? Ve Eliezer ben Horkanus imahem, if you have all the scholars of Israel, and you also throw Eliezer ben Horkanus onto the one side of the scale, Ve Elazar ben Arach, and then you put Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, who's what? The Ma'ayan HaMitzgaber, right, he's the constant flowing spring, and you put him on the other side, machrias kulam, it would weigh down them all. The tension in this Mishnah is in between these two students of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai is the tension of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai's life. What is my role? Is my role to preserve as much of the past as possible? Or is my role to be creative about the future? This is the tension of his life. This is what he's dealing. These are the major decisions that he has to make, which affect us and reverberate to this very day. The decisions that he made, and we'll see, because the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah lists all the decisions that he made during his brief reign as the Rabban, as the Nasi of the people of Israel. And it all starts with an interesting Gemara in Bava Kamma, Das Samach Amud Bet, 60b in Bava Kamma, which describes really the sense and the feeling of the people during that period of time. The Gemara says as follows, it quotes what seems to be a brisa, Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Kishicharav Habayit Hashniya Rabu Prushin BeYisrael. When the second temple was destroyed, so there were many people who were ascetic, right? They were ascetic during those times. They were separating. And what did they say? Shelo le'achol basar, v'shelo l'shtot yayin. Okay? So what did they say? We shouldn't eat meat and we shouldn't drink wine. Nitpa lahen Yabi Yoshua, Amar lahen Banai mipnei ma yatem ochlin basar ve'enatem shotin yayin. Rabbi Yoshua, remember, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai's right hand man, went to go deal with these people, and he says to them, "Why aren't you eating meat or drinking wine?" Amrulo, they said to him, "Nochal basar shemimenu makriven al gabi amizbeach ve'achshav batel." Says, "How can we bring ourselves to eat meat when the temple is destroyed, and this is the very same meat from which we used to bring sacrifices? How can we bring it? Nishte yayin, shall we drink wine? Sheminaschin al gabi mizbeach v'ashav batel, shall we drink the wine that we used to pour as a libation upon the altar, and now the altar is gone?" Amar lahem. So Rabbi Yeshua says, "You know what? You're right. You're totally right. Im kain, lechem lo nochal." Says we shouldn't eat bread either. Why? Shekvar bat luminachos. Right? Because we can't bring the meal offering anymore either. Right? And he says, Efshar beperos. He says, are we going to eat fruit? Can't eat fruit. Perot lo nochal, shekvar bat lu bikurim. Right? You can't bring bikurim. You can't bring the first fruits on Shavuos. So how can we eat fruit? Right? Efshar beperos acherim. Right? How can we eat other fruit? Mayim lo nishteh. We can't drink water either. Why? Shabitel nitzach hamayim. We don't have the water libation either. Right? So basically, let's all just drop dead. That's what Rabbi Yoshua says. Okay? And again, here's the tension. Here's the tension. Commemorate the past and be frozen, or step towards the future and forget. Right? Both are bad. Shatku. They had no answer. What are you going to answer, Rabbi Yeshua? He's a bright guy, right? He's one of the big five students of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, bright guy. So Amar Lahan, so Rabbi Yeshua says to them, Banai Bo'u. Okay, my children, come with me. V'omar lachem shaloli taber kol yikar. He says, I'm not going to tell you that you shouldn't mourn at all. Efshar. Shekar gvar nigzura. Gezerah, right? The decree has been decreed, right? We've suffered it. We have to mourn. Ulith abel yoter midai efshar. But to overwhelm ourselves in mourning, right? Yoter midai, to do too much, impossible. Efshar also. Why? She'ein gozerin gezerah ala tzibor. We don't put a decree upon the congregation. Elim kin rova tzibor yacholim amodba, unless they can handle it, right? People can't handle this. Dichtiv b'meira atem ne'arim ve'oti atem kovim hagoy kulo ela kach amru chachamim sara damet bito besid u'mishayar davar mu'at. So he says, rather, what should he do? A person needs to build his house, but he needs to leave a little place that's not fully finished to show this is the way we commemorate. What we have here is the essence of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai's challenge of finding the balance between mourning the past and also being creative and building a future. This is the balance that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai is creating. There's a fascinating Avot Rabbi Natan in the fourth Perek, Halacha Hey, which I brought for you on the sheets here. And you have Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Yoshua leaving Jerusalem. And they see the ruins before them. Pam achat haya Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai yotze miYerushalayim. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was leaving Jerusalem, vaya Rabbi Yoshua holeich acharav, and Rabbi Yoshua was walking after him. Vira'a beit hamikdash charev, and he saw the temple was destroyed in ruins. Amar Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Yoshua says to his rabbi, Oy lanu al zeh shehu charev, woe unto us on this temple that it is destroyed. Machkom shemechaprim bo avonoteyem shel Yisrael. It is the place that what? That they would atone for the sins of Israel. So what does Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai reply? What does he reply? Amar lo bini al yiralach. He says, my son, don't fear. And if you want to know where Rabbi Yoshua got to call people my son, you see here Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. He understands. Rabban Gamliel, we'll see, is not calling anyone my son. Right? He's not, you know, Rabban Gamliel is this force, this dictatorial force who's going to move halacha forward if it kills him. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai is there to hold people's hands, to cry together. Yesh lanu kapara achat shehi kamota ve'eze. He says to Rabbi Yoshua, he says, we have an atonement that is parallel, that it is as strong as the temple. Zehiu gemilut chasadim. What is it? Doing, acting kindly towards others. What's he doing to Rabbi Yoshua at this moment? He's taking Rabbi Yoshua's grief. He's taking his mourning, he's taking his devastation, and what is he doing? He's empowering him to create something out of it. This is what Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai has to do. I have to take the grief, and I have to use that grief to empower the Jewish people to make sure that they have a solid future and solid foundation to stand on. That when the time comes to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, you'll have a people who is mentally, physically, spiritually prepared to build one. Right, he says, and he quotes a pasuk for him. Ki chasdi chafatzdi velo zevach. What does God say? I want a ki chesed chafatzdi velo zevach. I want chesed. I want compassion, and I don't want. And I'm not looking for korbanot. And that's what we see in Daniel ish chamudot shaya mitasek bigmila chasadim. That's what we see in Daniel. Why is Daniel important? Daniel was the prophet or the leader. I don't know if he was a prophet, but he was certainly spiritually inspired by God. You know, however we define his Ruach HaKodesh. But Daniel was the leader of the Jewish people when? In Babylonia, after the destruction of the first temple. Umayin gmilut chasadim shaya Daniel mitasek bahem. Right, what was this gmilut chasadim? What was this kindness that Daniel was involved in? Im tolar olot uzvachim makriv bevavel. Was he bringing sacrifices in Babylonia? He wasn't bringing sacrifices. Valokvar ne'amar yisham elecha panteh ale olatecha b'chol machom asher tireh. He wasn't bringing sacrifices. What was he doing? He was doing kindness. That's what Daniel was doing. And so what you see here is Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai here in the stories, in the narrative portions of the Talmud and of rabbinic literature, you see what is Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai doing? Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai is trying to embrace the mourning and also empower the future to balance both experiences. And that's what we're going to see in the Mishnah on Rosh Hashanah. The Mishnayos in Rosh Hashanah in the fourth Perek, so what will they do? They will give you the balance of the takanot, of the special establishment or decrees of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai that he did in shaping what we call contemporary Judaism. Right? Because he's got to make us a Judaism that can survive without a temple. Okay? And he has to, at once, commemorate the past and at the same time, build the future. That's what he's got to do at once. So what is it? So we'll start with Perek Dalid, Mishnah Aleph of Rosh Hashanah. So says the Mishnah, Yom Tov Shel Rosh Hashanah Shechal Liyot B'Shabbat B'Mikdash HaYutokin. So we all know, right, for us contemporarily, if Rosh Hashanah coincides with Shabbos, we don't blow shofar. Right, that's the rule. right? Why don't we blow shofar? Because there's a fear that someone might carry it 4 amot, you know, 4 cubits, 4 ells in a public domain to go learn how to blow it. So we don't allow it to be blown on Shabbat. But there's no rabbinic decrees in the temple. So what would you do in the temple on Rosh Hashanah that fell on Shabbat? You would blow shofar. Bamikdash hayutokin avaloba medina. Right, in the entirety of the state, they wouldn't blow. But if you happen to be in the temple for Rosh Hashanah, you would get to hear shofar. Mishachar beit hamikdash. So now the temple is destroyed. So hitkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai sheyutokin b'chol makom sheyesh bo beitin. What is Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai's takana? We need to learn. We need to be able to commemorate. It's a simultaneous. It's a commemoration of what they did in the temple, and at the same time, building or establishing a practice for the future. What do? You blow the shofar in any place where there's a Beit Din, in any place where there's a rabbinical court, right? So this way, what are you having? It's beautiful. You're having, what is the rabbinical court a representative of? Torah, right? What is going to be or exists for you in the place of the temple until such time when the temple is built? Torah, the Torah of the Beit Midrash. Okay, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, kishehitkin Rabban Yochanan mezakai shayu token lo hitkin ela biyavne. Rabbi Eliezer argues, he says Rabban Yochanan mezakai said it wasn't every Beit Din, but it was only the Beit Din in Yavne. Again, establishing Yavne as a central place, so the people shouldn't forget that there was a central place, but also that they should have some way of living outside of the temple world. And then they responded to Rabbi Eliezer, no, he did it everywhere. Echad Yavne, echad kol makom sheyesh bo beitin. Okay, another one. Ve'od zot hayta Yerushalayim yetera al Yavne. Don't think that Yavne paralleled Jerusalem. Yavne was still a tick below Jerusalem. Shekol ir hait shaita roa v'shomat v'krova yichola lavo tokin ba. Right? In Jerusalem, Jerusalem had this magnetic power that the suburbs of Jerusalem, if you could see Jerusalem, you could blow. Uv'yavne lo ayu tokin el beveitin, but in Yavne, the rule was only in the Beit Din itself, only in the courthouse itself. Another takana. Barishona, originally, Hayalulav Nita Bamikta Shiva Uva Midina Yom Echad. The rule is that Lulav and Etrog, the requirement to take it is only the first day outside of the Mikdash. In the temple, you take it for 7 days. Outside the temple, you only take it, it's only a mitzvah on the first day. Okay? Granted, most people would probably have been in the temple area because it was Aliyah LaRegel, right? It was one of the three regalim. But what's going to happen now? No more Aliyah LaRegel, no more Mikdash, which means you've minimized the lulav and esrog. You've lost the experience of the past, and certainly maybe you've minimized the experience of the present as well. So what does he do? We all know what he does because we still do it today. Mishachar of Beit HaMikdash, hitkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, sheyeh lulav nita b'midina shiva zecher l'mikdash. Right, what did he do? He says that the lulav should be taken 7 days, even everywhere. Right, it's a rabbinic decree. But nonetheless, we do it, why? Again, zecher l'mikdash, that we should have that experience, that every sukkis, right, we should remember, you know, there was a time when people, you know, living in the shadow of the temple would take the lulav for 7 days. And the other thing he says is she yom hanef kulo asur, that the entire day of waving was asur. So what's that referring to? So we've all heard, right? Anyone who's ever been to a restaurant, you know, in Queens or Brooklyn knows, maybe other places. Sometimes it says on the front, we use kemach yashan. What does that mean? Kemach Yashan. Kemach Yashan was, so you weren't allowed to use the wheat that was harvested between Rosh Hashanah and Pesach until after the Omer sacrifice, the first wheat was cut, and it was waved in front of the Kohen. When would they do this? They would do this in the wee hours of the second day of Pesach, right? So right after Yontif of Pesach, that night they would harvest the wheat, and then they would wave it by the morning. So basically, you wake up for Pesach morning, you can make yourself some matzah. You know, your Pesach morning, second day Pesach morning, you can make yourself some matzah already. Okay, so what's gonna happen? So what would happen? What was the fear? This is what the Gemara explains. Okay, the Gemara explains that the fear was that what's gonna happen? The Beis Hamikdash is gonna be built b'mehera b'yameinu amen. It's gonna be the first year. They're not gonna be so chick-chock on the Omer, and you're gonna wake up. You're gonna eat your new wheat. Without having weight. So you see, that's how real it was. Like, again, it was very real. The Beis HaMikdash will be built. So this way, the whole second day, you can't eat new flour until day three of Pesach, just in case the Beis HaMikdash will be built, bam, you're gonna be totally confused. So again, there was a very real possibility. And again, they had every reason to believe the Beis HaMikdash would be built much more quickly. Right? Because last time is 70 years. All right, 70 years, you know, fine. Okay. Yeah, Jeff.
I wasn't here last week, so I don't know if this applies. When the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed,
yeah,
and they went back, you know, when Ezra and the Babylon, didn't they know already what they were, didn't Ben Zakkai pick up what they were doing, or why is he paskening stuff by himself?
So there was not... So it seems like he was preparing for a longer slodge than the last one. The last one they had a prophecy that said 70 years.
No, but I'm saying as far as like the rules, like saying like you know, oh, since you can blow shots.
So they did not make those rules then.
So they didn't have anything like that.
Yeah, correct. That's what it seems like. All right, Barishona. So remember back in the olden days. Like during the Second Temple period, so and even during the First Temple period. So how would you decide when Rosh Chodesh was? You wouldn't look at your calendar, but the witnesses would come, and they would say, we saw the new moon, and they would come. So what's the problem? They see the new moon, they see the Molad, they come, by the time they come, they'll come middle of the day, Rosh Chodesh already, right? So how late... Can you still accept the witnesses before the rabbis just decide we're going to declare today Rosh Chodesh or not? Or we're going to wait another day? How late do they have to... So, Barishona hayu mekablin edut ha-chodesh kol hayom. Once upon a time, they would wait until sundown. But what happened? Pa b'achat nishtahu ha-edim milavo v'nitkalkalu ha-levim b'shir. What happened? They waited. The witnesses didn't come. The Levim said the wrong song. It threw everyone out of whack in the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So what did they do? Hitkinu, they established that what? Shelo yeh mikablin edur ha-chodesh ela ad ha-mincha. Mincha time, right? Or here, probably as soon as the morning korban was finished, somewhere probably around mincha gedola. If the witnesses have not come by now, okay, that's it. V'im edin bo min ha-mincha l'mal, nogino so yom kadosh l'machar kodesh, what would they do? They would have two days Rosh Chodesh if they came after Mincha. This way, they would make sure if the Levim didn't get in the Rosh Chodesh song, right, on the first day, at least they would get it in on the second day of Rosh Chodesh. Mishachar of Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai shu mikablin edus ha-chodesh kol hayom. No Levim singing, right, so let's just accept the witnesses the whole day, right, because we don't have to worry about throwing the whole Beis HaMikdash service out of whack. Okay, so that's another one. So what's he saying? Again, he's recognizing we're living life without a Beis HaMikdash here. We're living life without a temple. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, v'ori ozos hiskin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, what else he does? Sha'afilu rosh Beis Din b'chol makom, no matter where the head of the Beis Din is, it used to be, where do you have to be? You have to be in Lishkat HaGazid, you have to be in the main offices. But no matter where he is, shelo ye'idim ochem ela makom avad. Even if the Rosh Beis Din is there, right, the Rosh Beit Din is in Lud, right? And here they saw in Lud, they saw the new moon. So he says, no, you got to go to the main office. Even though I'm here, you got to go to the main office. You can't do it just anywhere. So that's another Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai Takana. Again, the tension there, on the one hand, accepting life without a Beit HaMikdash, on the other hand, still focusing all of our attention towards one singular place there. Two more Talmudic statements. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, Chaf Aleph Amud Bet, Kishaya Beit HaMikdash Kayam, when the temple was around, Mechalin Afal Kula Mipnei Takanat HaKorban. What would they do? They would allow them to be Mechalel Shabbat to go bear witness about the new month. Once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, V'chiyesh Korban, right? We have a sacrifice that we have to worry about. We're not worried about the sacrifice. So better don't be Mechalel Shabbos except for Tishrei and Nisan. Why Tishrei and Nisan? Because if those are wrong, everything's out of whack. You know, you're going to throw your whole, you know, who knows when people are going to be fasting on the wrong day doing an Isser Kares. Or the other one is people will be eating chametz on Pesach. And again, you have another Isser Kares, a terrible prohibition as well. Another interesting one is the preservation of Duchene, right? Of the fact that Kohanim would go up. So Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Eina Kohanim Rishain La'alot B'sandlehen L'Duchan, that Kohanim can't go up and Duchen with shoes on. Because from their perspective, why would I take off my shoes? When were Kohanim required to take off their shoes? When they were doing Avoda in the temple, when they were doing the service in the temple, they took off their shoes. You know, if you're in shul, or if you're in, you know, some shtiebel somewhere, so why would I need to take off my shul? This, the Gemara tells us, is one of nine takanot that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai made. Again, it picks up on the tension. What is it? We're living in the present, right? We're doing Birkat Kohanim without a korban, without a temple, without the specialized things that we used to have in the temple. But what does he want them to do? Take off your shoes. Again, remember that Kohanim, when they used to do service in the temple, this is the last vestige, you know, of the temple service. Take off your shoes. You know, let's have a little bit of that preservation there within the temple as well. Yeah, Jeff.
They say, they still have their shoes and say you're a rechafah, or they would say, what did they do?
Well, they did it like we did. Like we do. The same way they would do it in the temple. But they would do it in shul, just like we do it. And, I mean, in Israel, they do it every day. Yeah, duchen. Yeah, it's the same thing. Same thing. Doing it for thousands of years. I don't think they did the piyotim. I don't think they did the piyotim. But I wasn't there. I don't want to make any bold statements. But my sense is, it was before the publication of the Art Scroll Siddur. So, okay. You know, you read the halachic texts and you get the sense of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai as this bold, decisive leader, but we all are picking up on the fact that he is making decisions in a way that has never been made before, right? You know, the tension between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Elazar. You know, is he preserving the past or is he building a future? You know, these are the tensions that he is going with. We have to imagine that there were some major doubts that were going on inside of him, which is why I believe the last Gemara that I'll do with you, a Gemara in Brachot, Daf Chaf Chet Amud Bet, is, I believe, the most telling and perhaps one of the most meaningful Gemaras you'll ever read. It says as follows: Kishachala Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai nichnesu talmidav levakro. When Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai became sick, his students went in to visit him. Kivan shera'a otam, when he saw them, hitchil livkot, he began to cry. Amrulo talmidav, ner Yisrael, O candle of Israel, right? He's keeping the flame of the Jewish people alive. Amud hayimini, the right pillar of the Jewish people, holding them up. Mipnei ma ata bocha, why are you crying? It's a good question. You who stood before Vespasian and asked for the vestiges of the Jewish people. You who've made the boldest halachic decisions in history. You who have valiantly led the Jewish people and saved us in the wake of the worst tragedy in our history. Why are you crying? Amar lahem. So he says to them, Ilu lifnei melech basar vadam hayu molichinoti. He says, if I were going to be brought before a flesh and blood king, shayom kan umachar bakever, that today he's here and tomorrow he's buried. Sheim kois alai ein kaso kas olam, that if he's angry with me, it's not an eternal anger. V'imosrani, and if he captures me, if he takes me captive, ein isuro isur olam, I'm not in captivity forever. V'im me miteni, and if he decides to kill me, ein mitato mitat olam, I won't be dead forever. Meaning, I believe in says, I could perhaps convince him with my words or bribe him with money. If that's the type of king I was heading before, I would cry. He says, v'achshav, he says, now that I'm on my deathbed, and they're going to bring me before the King of all kings, the Holy One, blessed be He. Shehu chai v'kayam, that he is live and existent, le'olam ulomei olamim, forever and ever for all eternity. She'im koes alai, if he gets angry with me, ka'aso ka'as olam, his anger is eternal. V'imosrani, and if he captures me, isuro isur olam, I'm captive eternally. V'imei miteni, and if he decides that I'm dead, I'm cut off, mitato mitat olam, then I'm cut off forever, for eternity. V'eini yachol lefaiso bedvarim, there are no words in the world that I can say to convince him to allay his anger. V'lo l'shachto b'mamon, and money is meaningless to him, I cannot bribe him. V'lo od, and not only that, ela sheyesh lefanai shnei drachim, he says, not only that, he says, I see before me two paths. Imagine Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, right? The Gadol Hador, unquestioned. There was not anyone who would argue on his decisions or his leadership during this time. The Gadol Hador, and what is he saying? I see two paths before me, achat shel Gan Eden, v'achat shel Gehenom. One heading to the Garden of Eden, to eternal life, and one heading to hell. And what does he say? V'eini yodea ve'ezo molichimoti. I can't see which one they're taking them to me. V'lo efkeh, I shouldn't cry. We see here in these words, right, that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was torn apart inside throughout his leadership commitment. You want to say that at this moment he's sitting there and saying, I shoulda, woulda, coulda asked Vespasian to leave Jerusalem. I shoulda, woulda, coulda, you know, made different decisions about the future of the Jewish people. Have I helped people accept living in a life without the Beis HaMikdash too much that they don't desire it as much as they used to? Have I been too bold with God's Torah? You know, there's all these reasons for him to lack confidence in the decisions that he made. Amrulo Rabbeinu Barchenu. What do the students say to him? They say, we believe in you. Bless us. Bless us. Amar Lahem, he says to them, Yihi Ratzon Shetei Mora Shamayim Aleichem Kemora Basar Vada. I wish that you will fear God as much as you fear flesh and blood. Right? What's he thinking about? What's going through his mind? Why didn't I ask for Jerusalem? Because I was afraid. I was afraid. What if I was afraid of God that much? They said to him, Amru lo, Ad Khan? That's all, Rebbe? We should fear that. We should fear God even more. Amar lehem ulevai. I wish that our fear of heaven was that much. Teidu, he says, you should know, Kisha Adam over Avera, Omer Shelo Yirani Adam. When a person violates a sin, what does he say? I hope nobody sees me. Right? Bishat Peter Atoh, but he never worries about the fact that God sees him. And as he was dying, as his soul was leaving him, Amar Lahem, Pnu Kelim Ipnei Atuma, what does he say? He leans over again, the halachist till the last moment. What does he say? Take the vessels out of the room so they don't become impure. Ve'echinu kisei l'chizkiyahu ha-melech melech Yehuda Shaba. And who does he see who's greeting him? Chizkiyahu. Fascinating. Why Chizkiyahu? Why not David ha-melech? Why not? Chizkiyahu led the Jewish people right after the 10 tribes of Israel were exiled. He was there when Sanherib was, you know, Feif Yado al Har Batzion. Sanherib was about to capture Jerusalem. Miraculously, it was stopped. And he made also uncommonly bold decisions which saved the Jewish people for generations. Who's going to greet him? Chizkiyahu. Why? Because they were kindred spirits. Right? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and Chizkiyahu made bold decisions in the wake of a destruction which were saving the Jewish people. The Gemara is clear in what it thinks of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. He may have had some internal doubts as to the decisions that he made, but from the perspective of the Talmud, at least this Gemara in Brachot, what, from their perspective, is he did what had to be done, and he made the bold decisions that Chizkiyahu made, and ultimately they were all the better for it. Okay, so that is, I think, you want to call it 70 CE to 80 CE. It was a moment of when things could have very easily have fallen apart for the Jewish people, and we were blessed. We were very much blessed to have someone like Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai who was willing to make bold decisions. We see here that he certainly had a lot of internal debates over whether they were the correct decisions. But I think history and certainly our religious experience has certainly judged him to be very much correct in the decisions that he did make. Okay.